This is a podcast from Cambridge Assessment. For more downloads, visit cambridgeassessment.org.uk.
Well, thank you, Paul. Thank you for the invitation. I should note that Paul has threatened me with being cut off at the knees if I exceed 45 minutes, so I'll start without further ado. I'm talking about pedagogy at three levels. I'm not being so stupidly ambitious as to think I'm going to give you a new theory of pedagogy, but simply draw attention to the fact that books about pedagogy tend to say very little about assessment. So I'm talking about how assessment fits into a broader picture. And it'll be in three main parts. One about formative assessment, pointing out that it's both fundamental and therefore difficult. One about summative assessment and making a distinction there between the summative assessment that teachers and schools do month by month, term by term, year by year, and the external high-stakes assessment where national agencies get heavily involved. And finally, talk about the context, the national systems, which create the framework within those in which those different elements are brought into harmony or not. And I want to preface the remarks about those first two sections by saying I've been heavily involved with colleagues at King's in working with teachers in schools, both in developing the ideas of formative assessment and more recently in a different project to explore development of teachers' summative assessment. And I want to stress that in both of those exercises, I have learned enormous amount, have learned by working with good practicing teachers, and I note there are at least two of them in this audience today with whom I and colleagues work, who turn ideas that I and colleagues bring to the table into quite new knowledge as they turn it into practical working in schools. And it's only through that transformation that I have confidence that these ideas work. And that's an underlying lesson for all varieties of reform in education. It cannot be done from the top. And there are many attempts littering the pathways to show that that's true. So let me start by talking about formative assessment. Well, what is it? The definition that Dylan William and I used 10, 12 years ago was this, that an assessment activity can help learning if it provides information to be used as feedback by teachers and by their students in assessing themselves and each other to modify the teaching and learning activities in which they are engaged. And I repeat that because, first of all, the key term is feedback. A second feature is it involves students as well as teachers in the assessment enterprise. And thirdly, that it is about, at this level, day-to-day, month-to-month modification of teaching and learning activities so they work better, so there's better contact between teachers and learners. Now, we had a warning sign when Dylan and I published stuff about this in 1998 from a Swiss French-speaking professor who said this: "This feedback no longer seems to me, however, to be a central to the issue. It would seem more important to concentrate on the theoretical models of learning and its regulation and their implementation. These constitute the real systems of thought and action in which feedback is only one element." He was putting up for us a warning signal. Don't focus too narrowly. Look more broadly at the context, the ideas about learning, and the whole context of teaching and learning in which those ideas fit. And I wish now, looking back, that we'd taken that lesson more seriously at the time, as I've come to realize later on that it's necessary. Now, let me put that into a context of a simple model. The simple model there is the teacher-learner interaction. On the left-hand side, you have the teacher, who is somewhere in the spectrum between a controller who delivers and dictates to a conductor who develops his orchestra of pupils into a learning discussion. And then on the other side, you have the learners, who are in the spectrum from being passive and just copying down and learning by heart to being totally involved, engaging with the ideas and feeling it's something in it for them. And the interplay between them is represented by those arrows. And the arrows are broken. They're broken arrows to highlight the fact that what the learner hears is not necessarily what the teacher intended to convey, and that's a basic problem. And in the other direction, what the teacher hears from the learner's response is not necessarily interpreted in terms in which the learner intended it. How do you get over those discontinuities? The answer is you only get over them by dialogue, by talking it through, not by having a question, taking the answer, saying it's right or wrong and moving on. That is not conductive of learning. And indeed, a quote from Robert Alexander about the importance for dialogic teaching. Children we now know need to talk and to experience a rich diet of spoken language in order to think and to learn. Reading, writing and number may be acknowledged curriculum basics, but talk is arguably the true foundation of learning. That's a very strong message. Never had now to start again on formative assessment. I think I would highlight it as dialogic interaction. That is the heart of it. And the only, my only quarrel with that quotation is the word children. All adults as well need to talk, as we well recognize. Now, formative assessment is a multifaceted entity, and what I've just been saying has really been about oral interaction in a classroom, feedback in discussion. There is also interaction and dialogue in written work, if it is treated in that way. That is, if written work is treated not as a judgment, as producing a mark, but as a step in a dialogue, so that the comments the teacher makes on it come back to pupils and are used to develop further work or improvement. That's the way written work should be treated, not as a thing that produces a set of marks in a teacher's record. And then, being more ambitious, the involvement of students should lead to their work in groups, because in that way far more of them can be involved in dialogue and discussion, and their assessment of one another can be a valuable contribution. And a great deal has been learnt in the last few years, the work of Neil Mercer and of the Spring TLRP project, about how to develop with pupils the capacity to engage in meaningful small group dialogue. Because it cannot be assumed that simply by putting a group of pupils in a small group and asking them to discuss something, that they will in fact engage in rational discourse. They often do not, and some of these pieces of work have shown that and shown ways to get over that and develop really productive dialogue. And out of that, we'll begin to develop the capacity of the teachers to be actively involved in their learning and begin to take control of their own learning, which is a much deeper issue. So we're digging down into the aims of learning which should underlie any theory of pedagogy. And finally, refer to the formative use of tests. Again, something developed with teachers. If you set a piece of test at the end of a module, and make sure it's not at the end, but allow some time afterwards, then that test can be used as a learning opportunity. It's quite natural when you've completed a piece of learning to want to review it and to draw benefit from that review. So the test is not, again, just a way of keeping producing a mark that may usefully have to do that, but it is also an occasion of reflection, where pupils, for example, can look at one another's test papers afterwards, can even attempt to mark one another's work, or can attempt to invent the marking scheme, because if you have to invent a marking scheme, you have to think about what counts as good. You have to get a sense of the criteria of quality, which sense you must have if you are, as a pupil, as a learner, to begin to be able to manage your own learning. So those last two have a very crucial part to play. And notice I'm straying into summative assessment already, as one is bound to do in any coherent system. And looking, therefore, at what underlies these activities in terms of learning, I have set out a set of points. First of all, what the teacher has to think about is to clarify and share learning intentions and criteria for success. Share, make them clear so pupils are part, own them. Secondly, to engineering classroom discussions and other learning tasks that elicit evidence of student understanding. Part of the point of tasks and of questions is to help the pupils to bring out where they're coming from, where they start, because effective learning must build on or challenge what people already know and think, not to attempt to overlay without any regard to what's there already. Thirdly, teachers should be providing feedback that moves learners forward. That is, that's the broken arrow bit, must be able to use what comes from learners to help them to be challenged, to express their views more clearly, and to move on. And finally, activate students as learning resources for one another. The teacher is not the only resource in the classroom. The pupils are resources for one another, as any who worked at developing good quality discussion within small groups of students can tell you once they get going, they can do a great deal with one another. And finally, therefore, the deepest of all, activating students as owners of their own learning. And that really bears upon one of the fundamental aims of school education. And we come to that through all of those dimensions of this area of formative assessment, and also the involvement of summative tests in that learning process. And it's that transition I want to harp on again and again as I speak. Now, a lot of that is reflected, as I said, in changes I learnt about and my colleagues learnt about through working with some splendid teachers and local authorities. And here I'm drawing on that experience by just simply quoting from what teachers said. Rather than me just being involved in crowd control and the dispensing of knowledge, they developed a partnership between myself and my students based on mutual respect and trust, one where all felt comfortable with being challenged and where we could all make mistakes. That teacher's not talking about learning a few tricks. He's talking about having changed the way he related to his pupils in a classroom. And again, what formative assessment has done for me is to make me focus less on myself but more on the children. I have had the confidence to empower the students to take it forward. Same type of message, a radical change of that teacher. And notice my headline, changing the teacher's role. What we have found as a consequence of 2 to 2.5 years of detailed work with a group of teachers, encouraging them to start with a stimulus and a focus on research, but as it developed, simply providing an arena in which they could learn from one another and we could learn from them. And that led to fundamental changes, teachers thinking about their role in a new way. And these were not novice teachers, these were experienced teachers from schools which were chosen because they were good schools, finding there was more to it than they'd imagined. But there's also changes in students. As this writer Perrineau said, a number of pupils are content to get by. Every teacher who wants to practice formative assessment must reconstruct the habits acquired by his pupils. Or a pupil. Here, now I know she's interested in what I think and not in whether I can get the right answer. When my colleague Chris Harrison came back from observing a lesson and talking to the teacher and the pupils afterwards and said, this is what this pupil said, that made my day. In fact, it made my week and my month. Because that pupil's begun to see themselves as involved in learning, not of just listening and getting it right or wrong. And another comment from a teacher, they feel that the pressure to succeed in tests is being replaced by the need to understand, and the test is just an assessment along the way of what needs more work and what seems to be fine. And I've chosen that one because it makes again this point of the possibility of a seamless transition between day-to-day learning and summative assessment. Here's teacher saying, pupils now see through their involvement in looking at their test results and using them to reflect on their learning, see that that aspect of summative assessment is positive for them. And that's part of breaking down any barriers between formative and summative, which I wish to emphasize. But assessment for learning isn't happening. That is to say, it's been widespread in the terms of people reading the stuff, and that's delightful, but in terms of what's actually happening in a very large number of classrooms, it isn't happening. And the question is, why is it so difficult? why is a message which I think can be powerful nevertheless has so little impact? Well, one reason is that misunderstanding. It's just frequent summative. A lot of presentations of formative assessment have emphasized setting targets, testing whether pupils have got the target, and getting them to go for the next target or to get the target they haven't yet got. And this is talking about the measurements and not of the purposes, the underlying purposes of arriving at effective learning, not about just measuring it. And, of course, that's happened in initiatives in this country. It's happened even worse, I'm told, in parts of the USA, where commercial firms sell formative assessment kits, which are no more than a set of weekly tests with the marking schemes. I'm doing it already. Many teachers when presented with this stuff will say it's just good teaching, isn't it? I'm doing it already. And sadly, they're not. It's not that they're being dishonest. They think they're interacting with their pupils and involving their pupils a great deal in discussion, but an observer in their classroom can say to them, well, you thought you were only talking 50% of the time. I'm sorry to have to tell you, you were talking 80% of the time. This is frequent. You can't blame a teacher on your feet. How can you appraise yourself while you're actually doing the job? But that misunderstanding is certainly prevalent. Thirdly, it's too risky, too radical. We're talking, as I said, about changes of role. Changing a role when you're interacting with pupils who are not necessarily well-behaved and who are hard to motivate, it's very risky. And with teachers we work with, it was a well-known phrase, it's pretty scary, because what we're working at requires us to hand over control to the class more than we did before, and that is dangerous. And finally, no time. We must cover the syllabus, and we must train pupils for the test. That, of course, is one of the biggest obstacles. Lovely idea. Everything takes longer to learn, therefore we can't do it. The evidence is that those who have spent time doing it get better test results than those who drill pupils for the test. But that evidence won't convince a teacher who's risking their reputation, their career, if they embark on a new trajectory of teaching. And again, I'm raising that possible lack of synergy between teaching learning and summative assessment. And let me just put that in a context of the following way. If we think of a simple model of setting up a teaching and learning, first of all, the first step is to decide the learning aims and distinguish between whether you're going for understanding particular topics or developing deeper habits of learning and thinking. Secondly, the teacher, having got those aims, must select and plan the activities. And what's important is the potential of an activity to involve participants in learning and, underlying it, the cognitive and effective principles of learning. Thirdly, there's the actual implementation of those plans in the classroom. That's where formative assessment happens. That is where the dialogic interaction happens. And that's where it's scary because of contingency. Put that word to represent the fact that you can never predict what's going to happen with a class, and what may come back may be something totally unexpected, perhaps bewildering, perhaps destabilizing, and the skill of teachers lies in dealing with the unpredictable, and children are always unpredictable, and when they get more actively involved, they can become more unpredictable. So that's the key and the difficult part. But then there's another step, which I label review, which is summative assessment, in which the question of how often do you need to review, and more particularly, how do you involve students? Those questions become crucial. But there, I'm talking about assessment within the control of the teacher and the school, the month-to-month, week-to-week, perhaps, involvement. And then finally, we have the other more remote aspect of summative assessment, where it's for certification, for accountability, and where it becomes high stakes. And the problem is, how can we achieve a smooth relationship between those two elements? Because Part D there faces both ways. It faces back to its role in developing the learning of the pupils as a complement to the classroom and the frequent written work. But it faces the other way. It's the model which can lead towards the challenges and perhaps the pressures on teachers and pupils of a certification accountability testing. And one of the difficulties is, and one way of talking about the difficulties is to say, E has become so oppressive, the accountability stuff has become so oppressive, that it's created the model for teachers' own summative assessment in their day, month-to-month practices. And given that model, there's no time to discuss in classroom. We've got to get through it. And so we infect and lower the quality of the classroom work as well. So things are going in the wrong direction, from the bottom of that list to the top. And the problem is, how do we make it work in the other direction? And I want to now move into the second part of my agenda, to say a little more about summative assessment by teachers and schools. Now, I want to talk a great deal about teachers' own assessments, but I want to preface that by saying nothing of what I said should be made to imply that I'm against formal external tests. That would be ridiculous. They have a very important role to play, always have, must continue to do so. And as Paul referred to a few in introducing me, I spent about 10 years as a chair of examiners for an A-level physics exam under the aegis of the Oxford and Cambridge Board, where I did my time at setting hundreds of multiple choice questions and so on. The quality of that matters. I'm not trying to decry it, but I'm talking at the missing or the weaker part. And now I'll talk again on summative assessment at two levels: teachers and schools and national agencies. Let's talk about what happens in schools. Summative assessment, which happens month by month, term by term, year by year, and that matters, that quality of that matters. Because on the basis of that, out with any external tests, SATs or GCSEs or whatever, decisions are made year by year about putting pupils in different teaching sets, whether they should or not is another issue. The information derived from such tests are used to pass on to in the next school year for the teacher of that of a particular class. Is that good quality information? They're used for reporting to the school senior management team. They're used for reporting to parents. The terminology used in those tests is the medium of communication with parents. They're used for guiding the pupil, because the tests themselves help the pupil to decide how best to dispose themselves, how they've been doing, where they should go. The point of putting those 5 points down, it's not that they're original, they're pretty obvious, but to emphasize the fact that the quality of summative assessments done on a regular basis by teachers matters, even although you may worry about the external testing. The question is, can the external testing help improve that quality? And that is a difficult issue. Now, as I said, I'm going to be drawing on findings from working with groups of teachers about improving their summative assessment. Here's one teacher talking about the problems as they saw it at the outset of the 2 years' work with us. Yeah, that is us being a group of kings. We're caught in a trap. Report to parents a level. Students focus on just doing tests. We have a level so that we have a level to report. We have missed the point of what we're trying to achieve. It's less and less of monitoring progress, more about filling in boxes. I'm not arguing it had to be like that, but I'm arguing this is the way a good teacher was thinking about their work. And I skip the next bit, move on to thinking about teachers' roles in certification and accountability, which is the other side of what they have to worry about in their summative assessment practices. And here's a general statement by Gordon Stanley and others at Oxford about this issue as a whole. With the progressive implementation of standards-based systems throughout the world, there has been an expansion of teachers' roles in three areas. The first is that the teacher is increasingly being seen as the primary assessor in the most important aspects of assessment. The broadening of assessment is based on a view that there are aspects of learning that are important but cannot be adequately assessed by formal external tests. These aspects require human judgment to integrate the many elements of performance behaviours that are required in dealing with authentic assessment tasks. That is a very powerful argument. It's been put forward in particular under the name of Gordon Stanley, who was in a senior position in examining authority of one of the states of Australia and then came to the chair of assessment studies at Oxford and was reflecting on what he's learning between those two arenas. And that is his point. There are very important aims of teaching and learning which cannot be explored, properly reflected in the limitations, within the limitations of formal external tests. I was involved earlier this year in talking with a group in the European Union, a group formed under the Ministers of Education, about authentic assessment. It took me some time to find out what they meant by authentic assessment, but what they're getting at is just this arena. All those areas of teaching and learning which are more complex to do with personal capability, between being a confident learner who can manage themselves, and with the capacity to put together the bits of stuff you've learned, select from them and articulate them to deal with a real problem. Because in the world out there, things don't come in the form of many GCSE tests where there's a requirement to cover the syllabus with a minimum of cost, and therefore you have an atomization to a lot of components. That's a valuable part of the exercise. It cannot be the whole task of summative assessment. And if it were, we're weakening the whole system. Now, why it matters, therefore, if we're talking about teacher assessment, I've already made the main reason why it matters. But there are two other reasons. The one reason is that you have opportunity in teacher school-based assessment to look at pupils' performance in a wide variety of contexts, not limited by the timing constraints of external testing. And also, you can look at them over several occasions, for example, during a school year. And both of those qualities enhance the validity and the reliability of the overall assessment. So I'm putting the view that the combination of the external test and its rigors and a strong system of school-based assessment is the optimum. Now, there's a history there of attempting to do that through coursework, which has been changed recently into the new system of controlled conditions. The awarding bodies have learnt a great deal about what's required to make this work with good quality. They've also done a great deal of work in one or two cases of looking into the reliability of coursework by teachers and are now struggling with the new regime set up by QCA for controlled conditions, though we don't know whether and how that regime will continue. But it's in mid-flight at the moment, so it's too early to say. And one of the issues backing off from that, one of the general issues, is if you're going to have coursework, do you base it on one task or on a collection of tasks forming some sort of a portfolio? For example, the older GCSE coursework can say mathematics, based on a collection of five tasks from one board, not on a single one. And that begins to explore the possibilities of covering a range and also providing some stability over several occasions rather than relying on the chances of one occasion, perhaps, which will go wrong for some pupils. Whether controlled conditions is narrowing down the range of tasks, I do not know. And then, however, if the way forward is, as I will argue, way of having a portfolio collection of tasks which are the pupil's remit, the pupil's evidence that they can present that this is what I've achieved at the end of a year, then that task must sample the domain of learning, and that's a problem, covering a range. They have to decide if there's going to be comparability between teachers and schools, whether some of them are common or whether they're all common, or whether some can be common and some left to choice, and again, whether you have new tasks every year. Good quality tasks are hard to construct, and they easily become stereotyped if they're repeated year after year, and certainly from our work for the Royal Society on an investigation into summative assessment in science and coursework, found that stereotyping followed the fact that the pupils are doing the same task year after year. The teacher knew how to get a good answer and could drill them to do it, and it lost all its values. That readily happens. So I'm pointing out, I'm doing a two-faced argument. One is desperately important to get this to work, but secondly, it's desperately difficult to get it to work well. And to dig into some of the detail of what's involved in that, we've got to have issues such as what makes a good task. Would a task, for example, have validity? Does it really reflect what it ought to be doing? Or is it simply replicating what the external testing can do better? And does it discriminate across a range? It's very easy to set a task and find that the lower quarter of a class won't show what they could do, or that you saturate in the upper percentiles can't show what they can do. And can a task be motivating? Because if it's not interesting to pupils, it doesn't seem to them worth doing, you won't get the same quality of commitment, and therefore won't really learn what they're capable of. And then issues about how you present a task. Does the teacher have to talk to a set script so that everyone's treated the same between different classes and schools, or can you match that to the class to make sure it is understood by this particular class, who may need a different explanation or presentation from another class? Secondly, what resources are pupils permitted to use? Are they doing a coursework under loosely controlled conditions? Can they be involved in group work or individual work? These possibilities are allowed in the controlled conditions scheme, but of course it's left to the awarding bodies to make them happen or to restrict them, which is a pretty serious and difficult responsibility. Certainly the task that we developed working with teachers of English and Maths in our project involved a lot of group work as presentation, as preparation, and all the benefits of that in mutual learning. And then in the context of production, pupils would work on their own within a limited time and within strictly controlled condition, having brought to that exercise what they learned from a much more flexible mode of working. Some sort of equilibrium of that might ensure quality in several dimensions. And then question of giving help. It would be unfair to give help, a teacher to give help when a pupil is producing, wouldn't it? We've had teachers saying, no, if I can find one or two pupils are really off task, they've really gone down the wrong road through misunderstanding the nature of what they're supposed to do, then I can produce for them a more valid and reliable result if I am able to put them back on track and remind them what the task really ought to be. We can engage in that argument. I don't know the answer. And finally, marking the product. How do you assure if the responsibility for marking and grading is out with hundreds, thousands of teachers, how you deserve quality? And again, the awarding bodies have a lot of experience of doing that, though they don't think they would claim they've solved all the problems. So how to ensure the quality of the results, which requires comparability, if teachers, politicians, employers, parents can trust the quality of what's been said. So you need shared and workable criteria. We found many teachers saying national curriculum formulation doesn't do that, though several have said, for example, in English, the GCSE criteria are much more helpful. You need to think about what scheme of marking are used, because if every teacher's marking in a different way, you won't get comparability. You need to say who actually does the marking, and then is the marking shared within the school between different teachers? Comparability within the school, and then between schools and groups or clusters. And does that business of checking on one another's standards involve blind marking? And it certainly involves moderation procedures, procedures where external people, moderators, or a group process ensures comparability. And that means bringing samples to the table, and one of the problems is how the samples would be fair samples, fairly drawn between different teachers. And again, awarding bodies are aware of that. At least one of their inquiries into reliability has shown that that last point can be a problem. And then there are the threats to comparability of bias, copying, plagiarism. I'm not trying to put everyone off teacher coursework assessment, quite the contrary, but it does require a tough, careful approach. Yet working on such issues, and I've learnt about all of them through working with a group of teachers about their summative assessment, you get these sort of responses. That the moderation and standardisation process was incredibly valuable in ensuring rigour, consistency and confidence with our approach to assessment. That teachers in school were highly motivated by being involved in the process that would impact on the achievement of students in their classes, like the moderation and standardisation at GCSE. Interestingly, that teacher is drawing on what he'd learned in the GCSE procedures and transforming it into improving the quality of what they did down the school. And a mathematics teacher, saying, and we've had moderation meetings, we were together with the other schools, teachers in other schools looked at how rigorous our assessment would be, and they criticised what, you know, our marking criteria is, and we changed it, which has all been very positive. So this is not just a chore, having to sit in these meetings to ensure comparability, it's actually a learning process for the teacher. And systems and pressures which improve the learning of teachers from one another are important. And here are some other comments which are rather different in character. I think it changed the dynamic of the lesson a little bit in terms of there being much more an element of them getting on trying to find out. They were trying to be more independent, I think. I think some of them struggle with that, and others, some of them, some still find it quite difficult if they're not handheld all the way through, when others were happier to sort of go their own way. What that teacher discovered is when it became serious for pupils to be involved in rather more open-ended, complex tasks, that new issues arose in the classroom, and new learning needs and achievements came out. It changed the dynamic of the lesson a little bit. So this was reflecting back into the teaching and learning because it was enhancing the validity of that which was to be assessed. And here's an English teacher commenting in similar vein. I think it's quite a healthy thing for the department to be doing because I think it will encourage people to have conversations, and it's about teaching and learning. It really provides a discussion, hopefully as well, to talk about quality. And you know what you think of was a success in English, still really fundamental conversations. And one of the things we found really set the whole thing going in a productive way with the groups of teachers where we worked on their summative assessment was to stop talking of the detail of what they did already and say rather, let's talk about what counts as being good at English. What does it mean to be good at mathematics? And this brought out their values, and assessment values matter. And once they'd thought that through more clearly, and we didn't have to do other than to provoke the discussion, because these were good teachers committed to their subject. But once they'd made that more clear amongst themselves, then they could look at what they were doing in their summative assessment and realize it was far off target, and there had to be some hard work with support, but mainly driven by their insights, to improve. And this is reflected in an interesting paper by John Garner and Professor Belfast about teachers' assessment status and skills, because he argued in an article that teaching is a partial profession, that teachers lacked skills and insights about assessment literacy, about the precise meanings of validity and reliability and so on. They lack some of the assessment skills they really need to do a good job, and they have not had opportunity to talk about their assessment values. Overall, John McGarden is arguing that this is partly because teachers as a profession do not have control over a very important dimension of any profession. The compares the medical profession, the legal profession, with the teaching profession, where the professionals control a large part of the outcome criteria in medicine and law, whereas in education, it's other parts of the system, particularly the political part, which exercise that control. So the question is, can teachers be more involved, more productively involved? Because part of my argument would be, unless they're responsibly involved in part of it, they cannot be expected to contribute to it and make it to grow in such a way that some of the discordances between teaching, learning, and high-stakes assessment can be resolved. But on the other hand, if one believes that something like that needs to be pursued, one has to take account that simply telling teachers doesn't work. I've drawn on my experience of I and my colleagues at King's learning from teachers in a productive partnership. That way of working is harder to adopt on a large scale. It's got to be done by teachers working collegially within schools with some outside support and control. It is not done by giving them a one-day in-service course and then issuing them with a ring binder full of pieces of paper. We've had a lot of that in the last few years on the assumption that somebody knows what to write in those ring binders and they've got to pass them out, and somebody knows what to say in a short course and that will cause the productive change. It doesn't. Teaching is much more complex, sensitive, personal activity than that. And a quite different style is needed if fundamental changes are to be made, and I am arguing they do need to be made to make assessment sensible. Teachers should learn from one another. Given the support, given the conditions, if given the opportunity, teachers can learn from one another. And we must try, and this is part of my argument, to redesign the systemic constraints and affordances which bear on teachers' learning and summative assessment responsibilities. So that sums up the main message. And it ends by saying that we can get a resolution, we can produce more harmony, perfect harmony. I wouldn't argue is possible, though it might be, but certainly more harmony across the different modes and pressures of assessment if we had the national context in which it could happen. And to go back to Gordon Stanley again. To repeat first of all what he said, with the progressive implementation of standards-based systems throughout the world, there has been an expansion of teachers' roles in three areas. The first is that the teacher is increasingly being seen as the primary assessor in the most important aspects of assessment. I repeat, that is a strong and important statement. But secondly, a second area where teachers' roles have expanded is in the setting of standards. A third area where teachers' roles have greatly expanded is in the moderation of schools' assessment. He's talking about teachers having a role already expanded in setting standards in the moderation of schools' assessment. What ideal world is he talking about? He's talking about the state of Queensland, he's talking about the states of New South Wales and the state of Victoria, because he was coming from his experience there. And there are systems where either in the Queensland there is no external assessment, and I've said I'm not arguing for that. In the state of New South Wales, for example, all the external certification is 50% teacher coursework and portfolios, 50% external tests. But those states have developed that to work through programs of teacher support, not just teacher training, but teacher support and systems of moderation, and teachers arguing about their curriculum aims and having some freedom in setting those, and then arguing about being involved actively as partners in the moderation, not as people who are moderated, and working to develop their professional skills and learning on the job and through their expertise in a way that external hierarchical systems cannot achieve. How do they manage that? Well, they manage that because in those Australian states, there is a single authority responsible for the curriculum, its curriculum aims, its specification, its criteria, the same authority responsible for the assessment, the same authority responsible for teacher development and teacher training. We have fragmented systems in this country, and there's not much sign that they work closely together, though there is a little. And we don't know now that QCDA has gone where the larger systemic change will be driven and how it will be driven. I think I've indicated the ways I believe it should be driven. Let us live in hope that at least at the level of teachers and schools work, we can drive in the right direction. Thank you.